Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Shai Agassi has a vision for a world that no longer runs on oil and a plan, he says, to get us there fast. 2 years ago, he left a top job at a top Silicon Valley software firm to start a green tech venture for electric cars. Now he's the new hope for zero emissions transportation in countries around the world. This hour on Point, Shai Agassi's vision for electric cars that go the distance and a greener, better world. You can join the conversation. Can electric cars break our dependence on fossil fuels? Is Shai Agassi dreaming or really onto something? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Stanford, California, is Shai Agassi. He's the CEO and founder of Better Place, a green tech venture that's building infrastructure for electric cars around the world. 2 years ago, he was next in line to become CEO at the software giant SAP. He left to tackle the problem of climate change with a bold plan for electric cars. His venture has taken off, and they've got hundreds of millions of dollars in capital and cut deals with the governments of Israel, Denmark, and Australia to ease the way for electric cars. Time magazine named him one of its heroes of the environment. Shai Agassi, welcome to On Point. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me here.
As I said, you were a top executive at SAP, quit that job, and within 2 years you'd raised $400 million to start this revolution in renewable energy. Tell us exactly what is Better Place.
Well, Better Place is a mobility operator. Almost, if you want to think about it, like cell phones. We don't make the cars. We make them operate better, just like AT&T doesn't make the Nokia cell phones or the iPhone, but they make those phones practical, cheap, and convenient to use.
So, in essence, what you do is you separate ownership of my car from the battery in my car. Is that right?
Well, we bring back electric cars to be consumed or used just like you use gasoline cars. For gasoline cars, you don't buy all the oil in an oil well and you don't create your own private refining mechanism. You buy the car, you own the car, and then as you drive, you buy miles through a mechanism called gas station. And so we are, in effect, the network of what would be a gas station for electric cars. We own the batteries, and we only sell you miles as you drive them.
So you own the battery, and I just pay for the miles on that battery. It's just like, as you said, buying a cell phone and paying for minutes, right?
Pretty much so.
So what about the infrastructure associated with this? How do you provide a network and a system that actually hooks people up?
Well, we have, in effect, three components that are critical in the system. As we've analyzed this problem, we figured out that cars are a social device. They drive for about 2 hours a day, and they park for about 22 hours a day. So the first thing you have to do is whenever the car parks, you need to enable it to connect to the electric grid and charge up. It's as if you have an agreement with Chevron to fill you up every time you park your car. That takes care of most of the drives and gives you a range of about 120 miles without doing anything at all, just driving and parking, driving and parking. The second element was the ability to go longer distances than the battery, which has always been the biggest problems with electric cars in the past. And what we brought in, which is somewhat of an innovation, is the concept of switching your battery on the freeway, on the long drive. So if you go from New York to D.C., somewhere in the middle of the drive, you would go into what we call a switch station. It looks and feels like a car wash, only instead of washing your car, an arm comes from below the car, takes out your depleted battery, puts in a full battery in its place, and within about a minute or two, you're back on the road. So it's actually faster to do it than to fill up gasoline. And the third element is software that connects all these pieces together to make sure that when all the cars come into work at 8:15 in the morning, the grid doesn't go down. When you come back home at 5 o'clock, you don't dim the lights. There's a big element of interconnection between the larger electric grid and sort of the private network of electrons for our cars, so that the batteries we have are used to improve the grid, not to destroy the grid.
You know, I think the concern with electric cars to date as a consumer has been, you know, what if I run out of juice? What if my battery dies and I'm stranded somewhere? That's why I don't want an electric car. How do you address that?
Yeah, we believe that if you have a switch station that is distributed across the entire region in which you drive, you're never going to get stranded, much like you don't get stranded when there are gas stations around you wherever you go. We don't have a range to our cars of the distance of what's in the gas tank. Our range of the car is the distance of how much infrastructure is deployed. You don't stop your car when you run out of gasoline. You just get into a gas station.
So the infrastructure then is key here. What is the cost of such an infrastructure in the places where you've tried this or where you're about to?
What we see is most people get afraid when you talk about massive layouts of infrastructure because it's hard for us to capture the magnitude and size and scale of energy. We use a number that most people find amazing. Our cost of infrastructure for Israel, for example, when the entire country is wired, when every switch station has been put in place, would be equivalent to 2 months' worth of oil imports for Israel. Hmm. Our cost of starting Israel will actually be equal to less than 2 weeks' worth of oil imports for the country. Hmm. And so the same ratio roughly applies for the U.S. We last year imported almost $1 trillion worth of oil. At about $1 billion, so about 0.1% of that number, we could wire any corridor in the United States. So imagine the Pacific Coast Corridor from San Diego all the way up to Seattle or even up to Vancouver, or the Midwest Corridor, the Northeast Corridor, Boston, where you are. All these corridors roughly cover about 25 million people. The cost of a corridor is about $1 billion to build.
You mentioned Israel is the first test market of this. It's already installed hundreds of charging stations, as I understand, promises to have your entire system adopted by 2011. Is government partnership a necessary step, a component for your vision for a better place to actually work?
I think at the stage when we came into Israel, without the leadership of a single person, president of the country, Shimon Peres, who literally took me by the hand from ministry to ministry, from industrialist to industrialist in the country, over a period of about 2 weeks, we would have never gotten to even think of doing this in Israel. Then we had the sort of the daily grind, the daily governance effort of policy, which was led by the Director General of the Prime Minister Office. And this is so interdisciplinary. It has 6 different branches of government in Israel that had to deal with it, from treasury to environment to transportation, infrastructure. And everybody sees just one aspect of this prism. And then policy was made so that all these elements work together in harmony. Leadership of the president was required in order to drive this through. And by 2011, we will not have hundreds. We'll have hundreds of thousands of charge spots in the country. We'll have tens of thousands of cars already on the road. And before 2020, I can predict Israel will not import oil anymore.
What other countries or states or cities have adopted your plan, Shai?
Well, the next country was Denmark, and Denmark has always been the most environmentally advanced country in the world. Their response to the oil shock in 73 has been tremendous in scope. If we want to see our future, we got to look at Denmark. Denmark already has 20% of its energy supplied by wind farms that are in the North Sea, so much so that they don't have what to do with the electricity when it comes at night and it's intermittent. So they needed storage systems to actually put these electrons that come at night. And the best storage device is a parked electric car. They're like yin and yang. The car and windmills are actually perfect systems. Denmark has put a tax policy that will incentivize electric car adoption at a much faster pace than any other country in the world. They put 180% tax on gasoline cars and zero tax on electric. So very, very big delta. The next location was Australia, mainly because we wanted to prove this would work not just in small islands. It would work in the largest of the islands. Australia is a great example to prove. It's got 3 big concentrations of urban concentrations in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, and then a electric freeway that's longer than the I-5 in the West Coast that connects these 3 areas. Then we had leadership here in the U.S. We had the leadership of Gavin Newsom, who the mayor of San Francisco, who brought together Mayor Reed of San Jose and Mayor Dellums of Oakland and created a Bay Area Coalition in San Francisco and announced that the Bay Area will go electric which will be the first non-island location that we will deploy. And the governor of Hawaii, Governor Lingle, who took this topic as her personal drive, and we announced Hawaii as the first state in the union that would actually go electric with policy that she's put in place in her leadership, similar to what we've seen with Shimon Peres in Israel. Mm. And our last announcement was in Ontario, Canada, with Premier McGuinty and his team were effectively trying to convert Canada and Ontario to be the hub for the next electric car industry in North America.
Are you surprised that just in 2 years, so many people have embraced this idea of yours?
No, I think we're in a very interesting period of time, and I think we're to a certain degree we're lucky. We're lucky that all these events have happened at one time. We had oil at almost 150. We have an economic meltdown, and so jobs are required. We need major infrastructure projects to happen. We have a car industry that has absolutely lost its way on its business model, and it needs a new business model, needs something new to revive it. We have awareness that was built by Al Gore to the climate issue, and we now know we need to reduce emissions. And if you take out cars from the road, you reduce 25% of the emissions in the world. So it's a confluence of events, and this is the right time to implement.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour with green tech visionary Shai Agassi about global energy independence and the promise of electric cars. Shai Agassi is with us from Stanford, California. He's the founder and CEO of Better Place, a company that's building electric car networks around the world. Talk about your partnership, Shai, with automakers, and specifically your partnership with Renault and how they make your plan possible.
Well, this partnership started in a very interesting way. We got a condition by the government of Israel to deploy this project was that one of the five largest car companies in the world would actually build the car in volume. And so we invited Shimon Peres, president of Israel, and myself invited the big five CEOs to a meeting in Davos. And the one CEO that really caught up to the idea was Carlos Ghosn. Within 5 minutes, he's a CEO of Renault and Nissan. Within 5 minutes, he said, "We've got the car. We can build it for you. We can make it fun to drive. We even have the batteries to power these cars. I'm your partner. Let's go do this." And true to form, he actually delivered over the last 2 years a fantastic team of engineers that not just saw the vision, but really designed it from the get-go as their mass-produced cars. So we've taken a bit more time than most companies do because we didn't do 100 cars or 500 cars. We designed from the beginning to do 100,000-plus cars a year. Hmm. And so tooling is bringing the price of this car to be cheaper than the price of a gasoline car.
So about how much?
Well, we were aiming for the sweet spot of what you see on a commercial on a Sunday afternoon football game. So the goal was to get a car that would be sort of in the $20,000 or sub-$20,000 range for the consumer.
And so to break into the U.S. market, Shai, do you have to convince U.S. car makers to design and manufacture cars to your specifications beyond what Renault is doing? And do you see a partnership with some of the struggling companies in the United States like General Motors and Chrysler?
Well, one of the things that we hoped was to convince the entire industry that this is the next platform, sort of this is the internet for the next car, and that we're open and we'd like to work with them. It was a lot harder than we expected, mainly because a lot of these companies are going through the hardship they are. We could work with Renault and Nissan. Nissan makes cars in America and in Tennessee, so there's the ability to actually make these cars here in the U.S. But we'd love to see U.S. makers. In particular, we'd like to see, as we now reshape the industry, I mean, you and I are all effectively now owners of General Motors and potentially Chrysler as we've putting our tax money into it. We'd like to see GM and Chrysler and to a certain degree Ford, without it being going through the bankruptcy process, shaped into more of an electric car company than designing cars that are fit 1995. Mm.
I'd like to go back just to the practical aspects of Better Place and your vision for the electric car, because I know convenience and affordability are really an important component of your business model. Can you explain why?
Yeah, our sense is that you can't convince people to buy a product that they don't like. We can all say that we want to be green, but if something was way more expensive, if we came into the market today with a $40,000 car, not a lot of people could afford it, and so the change won't happen. If we came in with a car that you have to sit and wait for an hour, 2 hours, even 25 minutes to charge, it's not convenient. And so the model needs to be such that an electric car stops less times than you do for fill-ups of gasoline, which the average American sort of fills up once every week. So we put a bar that said we won't stop more than 50 times a year. If you stop more than 50 times a year to switch batteries, we pay you instead of you paying us. And if you stop for more than 5 minutes, it's an inconvenience. We pay you if you stop for more than 5 minutes.
You actually send me a check. You actually send me money.
Absolutely. So the model is catering to what you want. You want to continue to drive as much as possible without stopping. And that's what we offer on convenience. And you want to pay what you've paid for the gasoline car and for the gasoline miles or less. And that's what we commit to. We will be cheaper and more convenient than a gasoline car.
So is that the reason why your vision is different from all the other previous attempts at electric cars and alternative transportation? Is that the one way beyond the actual system itself?
We applied a systems thinking. We applied economics and engineering at the same time, and we looked at the future and imagined it and then engineered towards it. I mean, it's not just hype or an idea. There's hundreds of engineers that are working right now at Better Place and in a lot of other companies, in Renault and Nissan and in battery companies around the world, to make this into reality. And the thought process, unlike others who basically said, let's start with 100 cars and then we'll figure out how to do 1,000 cars and then we'll figure out how to do 10,000 cars. We started from saying, if we don't do millions of cars, we don't stop this tremendous fall that we're all in towards the end of oil and the end of the climate in this planet. And so we need to go fast and we need to go big. And those were the initial parameters that we set. Mm-hmm. The other thing we did is we never said, let's wait for some new technology. We didn't do state of the art. We did state of the shelf. Mm-hmm. We went to what is already available, and we designed a system around the limitations of the technology that's available today, instead of saying, let's wait 5 years and find some magic battery.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Many of our listeners are waiting to ask you questions to join this conversation. Shai Agassi, let's go to the first up. Steve is calling from Rutland, Vermont. Steve, welcome to On Point. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. I think you're on the right track. I work for an electric utility here in Vermont, and we have a very clean power supply. And I know even with the dirtiest power supplies, electric is going to be better for the environment than a typical gas-powered engine. Can you quantify that in any way for the listeners?
Steve, yeah, thanks.
We at Better Place, we decided to commit to only buying electricity from new renewable power sources. So if you want to think about it, in Denmark, we're going to put 750 new windmills in the North Sea, and those will drive the 2 million cars in Denmark. All 2 million cars in Denmark will drive on wind power. In Israel, we're putting solar panels that would effectively become a virtual oil field for the country. Israel will be the first country in the world that will have its own virtual oil field, because effectively 2 gigawatt of solar will drive 2 million cars in the country. The amount to quantify, as Steve has asked, if you drove every car in America on electric power, you would need roughly 8% more generation. All of it can come from renewables. And if you went to that model with renewable sources, you would reduce 100% of emissions. If you went to coal power, you would reduce roughly 40%, 40 to 50% of the emissions, CO2 emissions, and you would reduce 100% of the urban particle emissions from the tailpipe. So effectively, you would gain on healthcare 100%. You would gain on climate either 50% if you decided to use coal or 100% if you used renewable sources as we do.
Shai, let me ask you about some of the criticisms of your plan. I know that and have read that some say that your plan is just too complicated, especially the battery swapping. You know, these so car wash stations, if you will, where you stop and they take the battery out, put a fresh one in 45 seconds or less. Critics say that's just not possible. It's just too complicated. What's your response to that?
Well, one, we're actually going to demonstrate one of those stations in the next few weeks in Japan. The Japanese government has actually asked us to put one there to see so that their engineers can actually see it. The second thing is I heard that a lot from car companies, and yet if you went to their NASCAR teams or their Formula One teams, they'll tell you they can probably do it in 6 seconds instead of 45 seconds. I want to remind all of us that we're the country that went from putting a man on a kite in 1909 to putting a man on the moon in 1969. Hmm. And that wasn't done because it was simple. It was done because it was complex. We don't shy away from doing something because it involves technology. And yet, whenever you come to an industry that looks at a new approach, at a disruptive approach, every engineer will tell you, oh, it's too hard, I don't know how to do that. We must not confuse I don't know how to do that from an engineer with it cannot be done. It can be done, and it has been done, and I've seen it.
Here's another call from Hampton, Virginia. Lauren is on the line. Lauren, welcome to On Point with Shai Agassi.
Hi.
Hi.
Question I had was, because I hear a lot about electric cars and such, and I was wondering if any consideration was given to towing capabilities or payload capabilities. I see a lot of people use an SUV-type vehicle to tow a boat, jet skis, that type of thing, and plus people are like in the construction trades.
Hmm. Well, you need a bigger horsepower, more muscle for a payload. Lauren, thanks. Shai?
Well, two things that we have to remember. The beauty of the electric motor is it's got immediate torque. It's very, very, very strong. Actually, sometimes it's so strong that we reduce the power with software. You could put more than one motor in a car. And what we've actually seen now is that you have two or three electric motors, in some cases four, one per wheel, in those cars. And we've seen those already perform speeds that go beyond anything we've imagined. The fastest car introduced into the market this year was a Tesla. It's a sub-4-second sports car. And so when you're thinking of power, you're thinking of tow power, you would see a double motor on an equivalent of an F-150, if you want, from Ford Motors, and maybe even a four-motor, one per wheel that is controlled with software that would give you the capabilities that you want for massive big cars.
Here's another caller, Jennifer. She's in Charleston, South Carolina. Jennifer, welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question for Shai. What about the big oil, say Chevron? Are they interested in partnering with you? How could they partner with you? And also, what's your website?
Jennifer, thanks.
Well, our website is www.betterplace.com, and there's a lot of information there, a lot of conversations on it. I think the most fascinating experience that I've had was my interaction with Big Oil. When we came to Israel, I in the beginning avoided going out and talking to anybody who was in the oil supply chain. And then I was asked to go speak to a gentleman by the name of Idan Ofer. He's the chairman of the largest holding company in Israel, Israel Corp. They just happen to own the refineries in Israel. And so for Israel, he is Big Oil. We sat together. He didn't know me at all. We sat together for about an hour. And after 45 minutes, he looked at me and said, "Thank you for telling me that I'm going to go out of business. Thank you for telling it to me before everybody else knows it, so I may be able to sell it before everybody else figures it out. And by the way, can I invest in your business?" And he ended up investing $100 million in our business within 45 minutes. Mm. We saw the same thing happen in Denmark. When we came to Denmark, our investor, our partner in Denmark, is called DONG, Danish Oil and Natural Gas. It's the oil company that is also the largest utility, which is also the largest wind farm owner in Denmark. So they've already looked at how do they go away from generating power with fossil fuel into clean renewable. But what they're seeing now is that the product or service they're selling, which is effectively miles, what they sell at gas stations at the end of the day after the entire process, is they sell you miles for your car. There's a better way, cheaper way to deliver that service called electric miles, and they want to be in that business.
Shai Gassi, do you see your innovations with regard to the electric car working in emerging markets like China and India, where they're just at the cusp of trying something new and different?
What's interesting, what China has done actually over the last month is fascinating. The Chinese government applies always system thinking. And so they went in at the problem, and this year they've become the largest car country in the world. They buy more cars than the U.S. this year. And they realize that they don't have oil, they have the same problem, they have a growing population, and they have tremendous problem with ground-level emissions. China put $8,800 incentive towards every purchase of an electric car by government agencies and taxis, and now the cities are doing that towards consumers as well. They've put a massive budget towards the electrification of the city, so putting the grid, as Better Place is doing, across the major 13 urban major centers in China, including Beijing, Shanghai, and Tianjin, and others. And they're driving, they're pushing their car companies to leapfrog the world's car industry by going directly into electric mass volume cars. And every car company in China is now announcing their plans to go electric. They're not putting their stimulus money or their job creation money into building better gasoline cars. They're just going directly to building an industry that's based on an electric motor, based on a battery, and based on an electric drivetrain, all of them manufactured in China. Mm-hmm. China will be a superpower in electric cars. There's no question in that. The question is whether we will be there when they do.
Mm-hmm. Here's another call from Bolton, Vermont. Corey is on the line. Corey, welcome to On Point with Shai Agassi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I was curious about the ramifications of having all these batteries once they're past their functioning lifespan, and what technology is available for recycling the batteries, and along those lines, how you would force the manufacturers to commit to a universal design so that as the technology increases and improves, the containers or the potential spots in the cars remain the same so that older cars could still use newer batteries and you wouldn't have to sort of stockpile all these old designs. Mm. I'll take my call off here. Thank
Corey,
you.
Thank you. Shai?
So let me start with the standardization on batteries. I actually don't believe that we can force car makers to use the same size. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the biggest misconceptions about our system. People think that we say that all batteries will be the same for all cars and you'll switch batteries between two types of cars. We will end up with batteries for one type of manufacturer. Maybe two or three will agree to cooperate on some of these designs. But eventually what you'll see is a Renault battery or a Nissan battery will go back into a Nissan car, and we'll need to stockpile four, five, six maybe different types of battery packs. And it's not an issue. It's similar to what you see in gas stations where you have four or five different types of gasoline. You pick the octane you want, or whether you want to go diesel or ethanol. The gas stations stockpile different types of energy, if you want, in the station. As far as recycling goes, we don't use lead-acid batteries, which is, again, a myth that most people go around. It's not the old technologies that we've seen in batteries in cars. These are new lithium iron phosphate batteries, lithium manganese titanate. Lithium iron phosphate are all common elements in nature. They're the 35 most common elements in nature. They're designed for a very long life. So a battery like that would last somewhere between a quarter of a million of miles to a half a million miles. Meaning they will last for probably about 20, 25 years in various different shapes. They will degrade and move from one location to the other, becoming smaller and smaller distance batteries. And then eventually, when we're done using the energy in them, which is the biggest investment we put in those batteries, we will recycle them and bring them back into a new generation of batteries.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour with tech visionary Shai Agassi about electric cars and breaking the world's dependence on oil. Shai Agassi is with us. He's CEO of Better Place, a company that's building infrastructure for electric cars around the world. 2 years ago, he left the software giant to build electric cars in a different and innovative way. On Earth Day Wednesday, President Obama toured a wind turbine factory in Newton, Iowa, and gave a speech on his administration's approach to clean energy and transportation.
We have to create the incentives for companies to develop the next generation of clean energy vehicles and for Americans to drive them, particularly as the U.S. auto industry moves forward on a historic restructuring that can position it for a more prosperous future. And that's why my administration has begun to put in place higher fuel economy standards for the first time since the mid-1980s. So our cars will get better mileage, saving drivers money, spurring companies to develop more innovative products. The Recovery Act also includes $2 billion in competitive grants to develop the next generation of batteries for plug-in hybrids.
Shai Gassi, President Obama's stimulus package, as you well know, included $2.4 billion in grants for electric cars, for plug-in electric hybrids, as well as $300 million for state and local governments to buy electric vehicles. Is that enough to make a difference? Does the president have the right idea? And what kind of interactions have you had with the Obama administration, if any, about your ideas?
Well, I think it's a great start. I think that President Obama has set the vision, the direction, which is what the president needs to do. I think that we have to aim a lot higher. I mean, we don't need to aim for 20% reduction or 30% reduction. We need to aim for the end of oil, and we need to aim for that as a coordinated process. I think we see that his team, his administration, from Carol Browner to Lisa Jackson to Nancy, I mean, the entire teams, Sutley, with a lot of work that was done before and during this this current administration at Congress and Senate. I mean, you have senators and congresspeople like Drogan and Waxman and Markey, you know, Jane Harman and Jay Inslee. I mean, these are all great leaders who've been working tirelessly in the previous administration, together with the Speaker and Speaker Pelosi and Senator Cantwell. You see this happening across different aspects of the plan. I think what we need to do right now is to put together a coordinated effort under the administration, leverage the fact that we need to find a plan for Detroit. We need to put a better plan for Detroit. Plan B, if in effect, needs to be electric motors, not General Motors. I'm not saying we should end GM. I think we need to, at the same time, hedge our bets. We cannot design the future of Detroit to be only gasoline-based, even if it's 35 miles per gallon, because that would be almost like building a Walkman with 2 hours worth of songs on a CD instead of building the iPod when the technology for the iPod is already around.
Let's go to Spokane, Washington. Mike has been waiting patiently. Thanks for calling, Mike. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I had two questions. One was, I see how well this could work for cities and major transit corridors, but how well could this be implemented? How quickly could it be implemented in more rural or backwater areas in America? And then the second question is there any plans or strategies for the millions or billions of gasoline vehicles that are out there that would be, are they going to be dumped into the landfills, or are they going to be somehow transformed into electrical vehicles? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Mike, thanks.
So it's true that this will start much like we did with cell phones from the high concentration urban areas. We have to remember that 25% of cars in America, which are the commuter cars, the urban to suburban commute that we see on freeways and in the major corridors of labor, account for 66% of our usage of gasoline. They're 66% of our CO2 emissions from cars. So we have to start from the urban areas, but then the rural areas will come online, just like we saw with, again, with cell phone network distribution. As far as recycling the current gasoline cars, I think that there could be a plan in which you would do a massive, if you want, electrification of existing cars in a planned way, in existing plants that would be able to sort of strip out the entire drivetrain, put in a new electric drivetrain. It would require a lot of warranty issues. It would require a big discussion around who does what with these used cars, whether they're used back in the States or whether they go out to developing countries. It can be done. There's a very big question of whether it will be done and who takes the responsibility for all the ancillary issues around it.
Shai Gassi, back to the heart of your innovations at Better Place, this idea that I buy the car, you own a battery, I pay for miles, just like a cell phone on that battery. Paint a picture for me, practically speaking. If I'm a subscriber to Better Place, how is this going to work for me day to day?
Well, you'll see multiple different pricing models, again, similar to cell phones. One pricing model would be sort of the prepaid card, where you'll pay on a mile-by-mile basis, or you'll pay, you know, sort of you buy 300-400 miles at a time, much like a gas tank, and you'll pay the price of a gas tank. In that case, you will probably get your car. You won't get any discount on your car. You will pay the full price of the car, and you'll consume your electric miles on an ongoing basis. We'll see some people who will buy 1,500 miles a month with some plan that will allow you to take the mile from month to month. We're probably not going to call it rollover miles because nobody likes rollover miles in a car. But you'll have some sort of a plan like that. And then my view is that we'll probably see some plan that would be sort of a fixed price, drive all you want. And you pay a certain monthly price, and you by that month you can drive as much as you want with your car, which would make this effectively the cheapest proposition you have in the market. Given that these cars today are eligible for a $7,500 tax incentive by the government, which is already in place. So imagine you would buy an SUV or a high-end five-seat sedan for $20,000 with a $7,500 rebate, give or take $12,000. It's the cheapest high-end car with no tailpipe that doesn't kill your kids, that allows you to drive at the price of gasoline. I think it's a great proposition that the consumers can have.
Time magazine called you the most influential businessman in the world. And I'm curious if you worry about other people or organizations co-opting this vision that you've come up with.
Well, I don't think you call me the most influential businessman, but I think that the plan is such that we have started from the get-go by sharing it with everybody so that we don't view ourselves in a competitive market. In a sense, if somebody comes up tomorrow and does a copy of Better Place, an almost better place, or an even better place, that's not a bad thing for us. It's actually going to create a competitive market where there are multiple options and we will push together. As long as we use the same standards for all the plugs and as long as we're all forced to be in an open access market so that we can roam effectively from one network to the other, 2, 3, 4, 5 networks in the world will be fantastic for this market. Don't forget, gasoline at the gas station in the aggregate in the world is $3 trillion a year. It's not a market that any company in the world should own on its own, and it's a market that should be competitive. It's a market that should be accessed by many companies at the same time.
Some more calls for Shai Gassi. Greg is on the line. He's in Grantham, New Hampshire. Greg, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I've been excited about Mr. Agassi's idea since I saw his TED Talk online. I think he sort of started to answer my question. I was going to ask, after his infrastructure is implemented, who owns all of these charging stations? Are they simply under the control of one company?
Greg, thanks.
Well, again, as I said, our goal is to open it up so that lots of companies would do the same thing. To date, we are the only ones who came in and had the audacity to go raise the money and invest it and put it up front. So that in the sense of the chicken and egg, we decided to go break some eggs before everybody else has done it. But I can't believe that we'll be the only ones. I think we'll be the first ones of many who will go build these kinds of networks. And the only thing we ask the regulator is to make sure that we are all using the same components, we're using the same connectors, we optimize effectively for speed of adoption. We in a sense are coming into a market where oil is the biggest monopoly on earth. You can't go and change away from a monopoly that is controlled not by a few companies but by a few countries, 12-13 countries around the world, by creating a new monopoly. The only way to do it is by creating an open market that then comes up and replaces the old monopoly.
Here's another call from Omar in Ledyard, Connecticut. Omar, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have two questions.
Okay.
One is, what do you think, I was listening to NPR last week or last month, I'm not sure, about the new using viruses as lattices to store power in batteries and made them more biodegradable. And my job right now, I'm retired military, I travel a lot around the New England area. And within, I'm right now in Ledyard, Connecticut, and I'm parked in the parking lot of a water-powered up-and-down sawmill, which is a National Historic Site. Within 40 miles of me, there are 300 dams that were built for mills or irrigation that could be used for to produce local electric power, which I think would fit right into they just go to waste. I know when I was in the military and we did some with other countries, an Israeli soldier used to take out at our camp the generator out of the car and put it into a stream with a flywheel on it to power the radio so we could listen to music at night. And I look all around here in Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, and see all these dams that the water's just flowing out doing nothing now anymore because they don't power mills.
So drawing on that electrical power, Shai Agassi, from local sources, what do you think?
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. I think that there's so much renewable power around us that if we thought about it as our independence, if we thought about all this renewable power from water, from wind, from the sun as our source of power, this is national power instead of import power. All we need is the right infrastructure, and a lot of it is already in place. If you think about what we're talking about, we're adding the last foot to the biggest machine invented in the U.S., the electric grid. And all we need is to add the last foot and then get off a substance that is both depleting and not present anymore in the U.S. Mm-hmm. As far as the question on the virus-based batteries, I think, you know, this is a great innovation that's happening right now in MIT. And I think we're seeing a lot of innovation happening in the area of battery research. What we see in the labs today is probably what we'll see on the shelf 7 to 10 years from now. And that innovation is similar to what we've seen in consumer electronics. I mean, when you go into Intel labs right now, you see the chips of 2015. You see the CPU of 2015. And that research makes sure that we continue to have higher concentration of power in the battery, cheaper prices, more efficiency, more life cycle. Mm. All that innovation secures one thing, that the price of a mile on an electric car in 2015 will be half of what it is today, and in 2020 will be half of what it is in 2015. And so much like anything we're used to in consumer electronics, this goes down a price curve, unlike oil, which always goes up a price curve. Mm. And I think we need to remember that. That shift would change dramatically how we treat energy for transportation.
I'm curious, Shai Agassi, we mentioned earlier that Israel wants to be the first test market for your ideas. It's already installed hundreds of charging stations, promises to have your entire system adopted by 2011. In my reading about you, I'm curious if you think there are political implications for Israel and for other places beyond getting off of oil, and how do you see that impacting potentially the Middle East?
Actually, I think I started from that thought. I mean, my original thought process came as a result of a question: how do you make the world a better place by 2020? Hence, in the name of the company, my thought was: I want to solve the problem of peace in the Middle East. And when you look at the Middle East, one of the interesting relations is between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. The Emirates have effectively diversified their economy away from oil as they're seeing their oil reserves depleting. And as they've diversified, they went into media, networks of TV and radio networks. They went into financial services. They went into education. They went into real estate. They went into tourism. When you start diversifying away from oil in a period of about 10 to 15 years, you become a modern society. And interestingly enough, somewhere in this process, they decided that peace is a better alternative to war, and then they signed a peace treaty with Israel. And so I think if we actually send a signal to the market that oil 15 years from now is not an important substance, is not a critical substance to sustain your economy on, it would force economies that are built on oil today to diversify and become modern. And if they become modern, whether it is in the Middle East or whether it is somewhere else in the world, they seek peace, they want to collaborate, they want technologies, they share in openness, and I think that leads to a better worldwide governance, much better than the tyranny of oil.
You are 41 years old, yes?
41 this week.
What do you see, Shai Agassi, when you look into the future? You've only been at this for a couple of years. What do you see in your mind's eye 20, 30 years down the road with these very visionary ideas that you've placed forth?
I'll make a bold prediction for you. 2020, more electric cars sold that year than gasoline cars. Mm-hmm. And by that point in time, people will question why didn't we do this much earlier? Not how come this was done in such a fast pace? And I'll tell you, I'll give you a metaphor that most of the listeners would actually relate to. About 10 years ago is when most of us sent our first email. On that year, we probably sent hundreds of letters and one email. And most of the listeners have probably sent or received hundreds of emails this morning until you know they've heard the show, and probably won't send a letter for the rest of the month. So those transitions happen really, really fast. If you think of music industry, if you think of the cell phone industry, all these industries shift when they become consumer electronics in speeds that are unheard of. And when you look back at the transformation and say, wow, that was really, really fast. And I think the same thing will happen with cars. 2020, more electric cars than gasoline cars sold on that year. Mm.
Shai Agassi is the founder and CEO of Better Place. He hopes to rid the world of its fossil fuel addiction with electric cars, as you just heard. Shai Agassi, thank you very much for your time. Good luck.
Thank you, Jane.
Do have a good weekend, everyone. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.